presentation, but that it was not a wine tasting or anything else.
Yes, I was under that impression myself. That's why I thought I'd better just make it clear. And I know that Mr. Rosemary Farmer's now, he took me once to some sort of, what do you call these things, markets where an informal sector can operate from our sellers. And people are offering you little tasties, etc. And the woman said, no, look, she's been doing these, what was it, schnapps or liqueurs or whatever. And she mentioned something, and it was the tiniest. But the quantity was about so much, so little. And she said, what do you think of this? And then I had three, what do you think of this? My God, I could barely walk. I wonder what the alcoholic content must be of that. You know, and how come it was selling just at a market? But never mind, they have to encourage entrepreneurs. Right. Anyway. So, I'm told there's another meeting occurring after us, and we have to say sharply at 1:45. Right. So, apologies, please, Mr. Malema.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. The apologies we have are as follows. Honorable Gail Lewis is attending Brixton. Honorable Coronel for driving base. Honorable Subambo arrived base. And lastly, Honorable Sumang is attending the Pedro Finance. Thank you.
I think it would be wise to check with the Honorable Subambo's party because we got that apology yesterday and was unable to arrive. Is he arriving or isn't he arriving? If you could just confirm that one. All right. Then, I'm just looking at the briefing on the draft, etc., and then its closure. The program, there are no changes in the program, are there, Mr. Medina? Mr. Herman? No. What time are we starting on the Wednesday? At 9? No, I think it'd be you better start at 9:30. The reason I'm saying this is that we'll kick the program immediately after the briefing. So please check that. Right, can I have someone to propose adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable William, seconded by the Honourable Mantash. We're going to immediately go to yourself. Welcome to the DDG, Ms. Lodwe in Thule, as well as the Chief Director, Policy and Legislation, Ms. Anya E. Kenzie, Chief Director, National Liquor Authority, Ms. Ramduni, Ms. Dr. Nonyona Mokabane, Chief Director, Legislative Drafting, Ms. Makaipa, Director, Liquor Policy and Law, Mr. Labotsi, Mr. Labotsi, Deputy Director, Liquor Policy and Law, and Ms. Rampelli, Assistant Director, Liquor Policy and Law. Where are all of these in our draft law? About half a dozen of you. Thank you. And welcome to you, Ms. Nadia. Can you go ahead then, DDG?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, and thank you very much again for the opportunity to engage with the committee. Chair, Mr. Nesens is going to be taking you through the policy document. So basically you'll run us through the presentation. Just by way of introduction, the draft policy document is out for public comment, and we are already engaging with the stakeholders in face-to-face meetings. And we are also engaging in public platforms to provide clarity and the rationale for some of the proposals that have been put to the table. Chair, in the process today, we're going to try and just give you an overview. We may not necessarily cover each and every detail of the draft policy, but we will be able to clarify if there are any questions on some of the aspects that we may not have covered today. Chair, by, like I said, by way of background, the liquor industry in South Africa is regulated in the Department of Trade and Industry as an industry in this country that contributes significantly. I think if you look at it comparatively with other industries, it does contribute immensely to the economy of the country. We have been receiving questions simply to say, why is it that the liquor issues that are being raised in the policy are raised by the Department of Trade and Industry and not necessarily the other departments, because some of the issues that we are proposing are things that look like they relate to other departments rather than trade. But I just want to say, Chair, that to put this in context, like any other industry, the liquor industry is subject to oversight by the Department of Trade and Industry. That we do from a regulatory point of view, in looking at the manufacturing as well as distribution of liquor in South Africa. But over and above that, as an industry, we are also responsible for assisting the industry, for instance, for market access issues, for purposes of exports, and as you notice that we having growing figures around our export of wines, you know, as the negotiations now that were taking place around the AGOA, the wines are the beneficiaries of that arrangement as well. So we do have an obligation as well as the state to support the industry to assist them in the areas where they need to be assisted to ensure that they operate as well in a sustainable manner in this industry. Sure. We started the process a while back, and McDonald will just give a step-by-step in terms of where we started. But firstly, I must just indicate that because of the problems that this country is experiencing regarding the socio-economic impact of alcohol in this country, the President instituted an inter-ministerial committee which comprised of several ministers, but key to that committee was the Minister of Social Development, the Minister of Health, the Minister of Trade and Industry, the Minister of Police, as well as the Minister of Education. Yes, there are other ministers responsible for some aspects like agriculture, but I'll just mention the main ministers, you know, from whom recommendations have come, which are also incorporated in this policy. This is intended to ensure that we don't have fragmentation in terms of how we approach liquor issues or liquor regulation issues. So all of the proposals that have come from various departments have been integrated in this policy document. And hence our response to those that are asking why is the Department of Trade and Industry the one that is concerned about the age limit for alcohol consumption. Because this is an industry that we are regulating. Therefore, if there's any requirement to determine how they should trade, that requirement would reside within the trade and industry regulations to dictate how the trading should take place. So I will just stop there and allow McDonald to just take the committee through the presentation, and I will then summarize just to highlight some of the controversial or prominent features of this policy. And how we are also handling that from a consultation perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, as alluded to by the ADG, I will just give you a step-by-step presentation by way of background. The Liquor Act 27 of 1989 governed the liquor industry in various provinces. In 1997, the liquor policy was developed with the following objectives: restructuring the liquor industry to promote wider participation and encourage transformation, addressing and reducing the socio-economic cost of alcohol abuse in South Africa, and then in 1998, the liquor bill was referred to the Constitutional Court on grounds of constitutionality. Just to explain these grounds of constitutionality, the issue of concurrency. In other words, the national and the provincial government, all of them have got a say the provincial deal with the retail, and then national deal with distribution and manufacturing. In 2010, the president established the Interministerial Committee, which the DDG was summarizing just now. And then in 2011, or maybe to say a point here in the Interministerial Committee, there was this issue of saying we want the ban, total ban of advertisement, as an example, and the Social Development and the Health Department, we came with a deal, and then we'll talk more later. In 2011, the Biannual Substance Abuse Summit was convened in Etiquette, and then in 2012, the National Liquor Regulation Conference was held in Gauteng, and then in 2013, a certain organization called DNA Economic Commission by the DCI produced a report on the effectiveness of the Act. And in 2013, the minister issued regulations to strengthen registration requirements and processes and to introduce trading hours for distributors. In February, the minister issued the liquor norm and standard. In 2014, draft national liquor policy review document was tabled at the National Liquor Policy Council for consideration. This is the policy we're talking about now. So it was approved at the National Liquor Policy Council for wider public consultation. In other words, the NLPC consists of the minister and his counterparts in the province. The liquor regulatory framework is like this. In 2003, an act came into being, and then it regulates two areas. We said macro manufacturing and then distribution. That is the national competence by the DCI. And then you may ask to say what constitutes macro. There is the figure 100 million, 500, and then 4 million liters, 2 million of series, and then and the other liquor. And then at the provincial level, they use the 1989 Act. And then the micro manufacturing, anything that is less than the macro. Macro is defined there with the liter. Yes. So they deal with the retail. So the liquor regulation is a subject to concurrent jurisdiction. It sounds repetitive. That is the point we're emphasizing. NLPC is a structure that is created in terms of Section 37 to coordinate concurrent jurisdiction. So it cannot be treated as the minimum, that is the minister and other MECs. These are said meetings don't take place. This one is a statutory point. And then the NLPC, the National Liquor Authority, that is the body that is a chief director. A chief director was introduced just now. She has that national liquor authority. And the macro manufacturers and distributors are regulated there. In other words, the licenses are issued and given to them. Then the provincial liquor board, they deal with micro manufacturers and retailers. Municipalities also have a say. You may find that they have zoned an area for businesses, but a liquor board may issue a license contrary to that zoning. I will repeat myself. What we are saying is that the municipalities are not in the equation, they are not in the equation of the National Liquor Policy Council. But whatever we do with nonsense standards, as an example, we have to take into account that the municipalities also have an indirect jurisdiction of regulating businesses at a local level. They may issue a zoning certificate that a particular business should operate in point X. And then it will be self-visiting, if a boss, a liquor boss, issues a license to an entrepreneur or a being to operate, not in the zoning area, in an area which is not required by the zoning, so all in all we are saying, therefore the NLPC also have to take into cognizance the municipalities, I want like to say municipal laws, but these are bylaws. Yeah, we need to take cognizance of that. Here's the statistics. I'm not good at statistics, but I will read them. So all in all is that this statistics on the liquor industry manufacturers and distributors, and then you find that we have a total listed registrant. There's the figure 2,706, and then cancelled 526. That goes the legend. So duplicates refer to where one entity has multiple premises or subsidiaries, like SAB probably. Statistics on the liquor industry, provincial licenses. This is just an indication that Eastern Cape, as an example, has got 30 manufacturers, micro, distributors 00, naturally, because distribution is the competency of the national government. And then we have online consumption at 1,700. So I'm reading slow in order for the members to read for themselves. It's something figure. But I was just disturbed personally. I looked at Limpopo. It has got 9982. Sure. Industry trends 2003 and 2011. 2003 there was 4,346 great farmers in the sector. And then 2010, 2011, 3527, there is a decline there. How it is caused, we may explain, but sometimes it is caused by mergers and acquisition at another level. And then 248 wine sellers, and then they went to 528. So there is a sort of a cost there. 5 to 10, major spirit producers, importers, no change. Major macro brewers, beer producers, there were 5 in 2003, now it's 2. You have the reason, I understand it's a major and acquisition that took place. And then maybe if we can explain this measure, a good example is say it's in the music industry. When we grew up, we used to know Gallo, BMI, and like, he combined themselves, and therefore it has got an impact on the subsidiary or the picture of the sector in South Africa. And then you come to distributors, in 2003, they were 85, now there are over 2,000 licenses. And then 30,000 in 2003, retail licenses granted, now it's estimated at 65,000. Drinking pattern. Prevalence of current alcohol use, binge drinking, and hazardous or harmful use among males and females in South Africa, 15 years and older. And then the green is for males, the yellow is for females, and gray is for green. So you can see the pattern there. Okay, drinking patterns continues. This one is comparing countries. Total recorded alcohol per capita consumption, 15 plus in liters of pure alcohol, and then in the Southern African Development Community, SADC, and then countries. Mauritania is 4.8, and then South Africa, we are at 27.1. Namibia 27.7, and then Zimbabwe 14.6. You can see that we are almost the highest. We are the highest. Namibia, the population is very low. Botswana is very low. and then our is now in the fifth ship class or something of that sort. We are at 27. Yeah. Socioeconomic harm. South Africa has one of the riskiest drinking patterns in the world, and we are ranked number 5. Between 2003-2005, per capita consumption, 2 alcohol equals 9.5 liters per year, compared to an African average of 62 liters. This means that South Africa drinks on average 53% more than the rest of Africa. That is the World Health Organization statistic. So, just a point is that there are fewer drinkers in South Africa. However, those who drink, they drink and try to cover for those who do not drink. So that is the point to make here. And then alcohol is the third leading cause of premature death and disability. Tangible financial cost of harmful alcohol use alone are equivalent to 1.6% of GDP. South Africa is also a global leader in terms of alcohol-related harm, with 10 times the global average for male homicides and twice the global average for road injury deaths. Sorry, yeah. Socioeconomic harm continues. The greatest contributor to alcohol-related harm is violence, which accounts for 39% of all harm. 18% is due to mental health problems resulting from harmful alcohol use, and 14% of harm is due to road deaths. Fetal alcohol syndrome has also reached endemic proportions in some parts of the country. In a research conducted in the Western Cape, that is Wellington as an authority, the prevalence of FAS, that is fetal alcohol syndrome, among grade 1 scholars in 1997 was found to be at 4.8%, increased to 7.6%, and from 2001 increased to 8.8%. The industry contributes considerably to the economy while people are dying. It contributes considerably to the economy, with jobs estimated at 548,000, with total government tax revenue estimated at 41.8 billion, and total economic contribution. So, but all in all, what we're saying is that that issue of balancing the harm and the economic imperatives, that's where we are now. After narrating those violence, death, percentages, all those issues, and now this is the economic contribution, but we need to come with a balancing act. Policy proposal. Policy proposal contained in the transnational liquor policy review document has taken into account the research. As we indicated, we start with the research. The IMC is the Interministerial Committee deliberation and their recommendations, and then consultative summit and conference in Gauteng as an example, consultation process at NLTC, World Health Organization recommendations, and then benchmark studies. So the DTI developed a policy proposal, the socio-economic cost and harms associated with liquor abuse, slow pace of transformation, standardization of key aspects of regulation, illegal liquor manufacturing and trading. Last time on gambling, the DVD was talking about the issue of spirits, like industrial alcohol, that needs to be regulated. Sometimes, if it is 100%, it may kill people. So you need to regulate. You say maybe 5% or 3%. That is the Department of Agriculture and ourselves. We are worried if the alcohol content is too high. Yes. Capacity and enforcement constraints within the National League Authority, ineffectiveness of the NLPC, and then the exorbitant cost stages and then we will explain ourselves. But the issue as follows. Challenges, that is socio-economic cost and arms on the left, and then on the right we are seeing we come with amendments of Section 9 in order to align with the control of marketing of alcohol beverage beer. The bill calls for restrictions on advertising and promotion and the prohibition of sponsorship and money. So sometimes we may be talking about a ban. Within a regulatory framework, I'm explaining myself on other issues, because this issue of regulation, you can regulate, you can restrict, you can ban within the same environment. And then we're talking about prohibition of sponsorship and marketing. That is the banning part of it, maybe. And the restriction within regulatory framework. Okay. And then a government managed fund responsible for combating alcohol abuse should be established. The industry should contribute to this, to constitute a percentage. Here, in short, like in gambling last time, we're talking about the issue of rehabilitating people who are already addicted in gambling. Now, in liquor, people who are already addicted, they can be rehabilitated. There should be an effective body, and the industry should be levied in order for us to have education widely, not only to a particular community. And then we also have the challenge socio-economic cost and arms on the left, and then on the right we are saying we are reviewing the legal drinking age from 18 to 21. We may have to explain ourselves here. What we are saying is that age on its own, it also contribute, or it has got a contributory effect to the way of drinking. So if a person is 15 years plus, that person may be drinking differently from a person who is maybe 50. The 50-year-old may take more responsibility. So, but on its own, the contribution is small. So it's a cumulative, it's a collective contribution by other factors. Example, if we say trading hours, you no longer are allowed to open at 6 o'clock to 6 o'clock. You open at 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock, as an example. Therefore, we have limited access. The issue of age may also contribute in between. And then, we also have to say trading hours, all those issues can contribute cumulatively. So in other countries, in Europe, Austria, France, they may allow 6-year-olds, 16, Austria and France may allow 1-6-year-old to drink. You go to the U.S., they 21, with a few exceptions of one or two states. And then you go to Japan, they say 20 years. So, we are saying we want to move from 18 to 21. So the issue of age, therefore, it should not be questioned as to whether it assists in reducing the drinking pattern. In the policy, we explained ourselves in detail, but I'm just giving an example. Some people may think it's unconstitutional, this and that. We can deal with that, but we are saying age contributes to the issue of drinking, and then rest together with other factors, it can assist in reducing the drinking. Manufacturers, suppliers, and retailers to bear liabilities for any harm or damages caused by intoxicated persons. Let me explain myself here.
we are talking about what we call tricks like this, or areas like this. In other words, we are saying the person enters into your shebeen or your outlet, and then you see that this person is drunk, already drunk. But you continue to supply liquor to that person. And that person enters into a car and then meets an accident. It can easily be proven that it is because of intoxication that the accident took place. That it can be proven. Yeah. So therefore the person who supplies liquor to that person, seeing that that person is already drunk, should be held responsible, whether it's a civil suit, whether it's damages along the way, that person can be held responsible. Equally, the manufacturer, the owner of the liquor, if it is Lion, I'm using Lion deliberately, it's no longer there, I know. The Lion cousin, lady cousin, that's an example, it is owned by somebody, and people were drinking content owned by that brand. So we are saying the owner of the brand should also be liable. The issue of burden of proof is another issue. We can deal with it at all. It's like in a criminal case, it's difficult to prove beyond reasonable doubt, but that is a burden of proof that is required. So we are saying therefore this can limit this issue of providing liquor to people who are already drunk. And the education and awareness can also assist. And then no liquor licenses should be issued to petrol stations or next to premises in the stations. So all in all is that if people want to migrate from a petrol station to another area, they need to enter into discussion with the authorities where can we relocate. And then we give you a transitional period of 2 years as an example. Then transformation, we are seeing NLA, that is National Liquor Authority, to ensure that registration conditions, as articulated in the B, what is it, B, triple D, E, black, broad, black. Yeah, that one, yes. Broad-based economic empowerment. Codes of good practice are imposed and strictly monitored. We're talking about the good practices code as if everything is okay now. We're talking at that level. And failure to adhere to the codes of good practice may result in revocation of a registration or non-renewal.
You come from KKN, Professor? Professor? Right. Simon. You know, I wondered when you were a young man, a little boy as it were, to remember the slogan, the beer, Lion, the Vienna Tell made famous, and I wondered if, you know, the sale of beer dropped when Lion disappeared. You come from KKN, huh? Uh-huh. Possibly, yes. Right. Mr. Nietzsche, Chenzi?
No, thanks. So, on the left-hand side, we're seeing the improving of a regulatory collaborative network. Harmonization of national and provincial laws on liquor. In other words, the National Liquor Policy Council. And then, to a certain extent, the municipalities were saying we need to move to one direction in order to have a harmonized approach. And then, currently, only KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, and Northern Cape have migrated from the 1989 legislation to the 2003 norms and standards, if I may put it in that way. So the rest are still in 1989. So whatever problem we have, we may be going this way. So all in all is that we will encourage the other provinces to migrate to the 2003 Act norms and standards, and they can come with their own legislation but guided by the 2003. Then we will be moving to the right direction. The norms and standards to be integrated in both national and provincial legislation or regulations to ensure coherence and harmony. And capacity and enforcement constraints within NLA, repositioning the NLA to become a trading entity of the GTR with more capacity and power to enforce to legal legislation. And then the other issue is eradicating illegal manufacturing and trading in liquor. We strengthen the provision that deals with illegal manufacturing and trading in liquor and intensify consumer awareness. The penalty provision should be enhanced. The issue of internal review mechanism, just to explain, is that if the NLA, National Liquor Authority, issues a license or refuses, let's say it refuses to issue a license, for whatever reason, the person has to go to court to challenge that. And that is a tedious and costly process. As for now, this policy is unless there's an internal mechanism where a decision of an official can be reviewed internally, and that will speed the process. People are not are coming here to run business, not to play in court. So this is the process that we're introducing. And then the NPC effectiveness of the NSPC last week, or whatever, we talk about the gambling process, the minister and the counterpart meeting, and that we think, because it is adopted that at the NMPC level, that as for now, if we have an issue and then we don't correct, the next meeting we correct or we don't correct, we take a decision. That's what is being proposed. That decision was taken by the politicians themselves. So in conclusion, in order to deal with socio-economic effects of liquor, it is important to apply a combination of interventions relating to price, marketing, availability, and accessibility. It is important to acknowledge the steps taken by the NLPC in adopting the liquor norms and standards, which will standardize trading practices across provinces. In other words, one example is you are drinking, say, in Gauteng next to Wombat, and then they close. You run to Limpopo in Wombat, you run to Mpumalanga just next door, you go to Hammanskraal next, which is northwest. But so in four provinces, they have got different trading hours and then different laws. So all in all, we are saying we need to harmonize and move to one direction. That's what we think. Other interventions will be required to promote exports in agro-processing as an example. Way forward is that on the 2nd of July 2015, the submissions will post to the policy from the public, and then we'll be consolidating them. Face-to-face meetings are taking place. Example, the DDG and my colleagues may shoot me down. We have a series of meetings, if I'm not mistaken, tomorrow, two of them, and the next week, face-to-face, with the industry tomorrow in Simon's house, if I'm not mistaken. These are just examples of how wide consultation can be. So the revised National Liquor Policy Review document will be submitted to the NLPC and then after the cabinet, and then it will inform the bill. There will be a draft liquor amendment bill that will have to be informed by the deliberation. Thanks, Chair and Honourable Member.
Yes, DDD, do you want to make a closing comment?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. The presentation basically just gives an overview of what we have in the policy. Chair, we obviously omitted, and I must apologize for that we didn't also forward the norms and standards. that were issued in February, because they're actually an important part of all the policy documents. Because some of the aspects that we intended to deal with, which were proposed by the various departments, they are dealt with in the Northern Standards. Those are like your basic practices in the outlet, and it talks to issues around age verification, you know, how the premises should look like, evacuation requirements, and all of those sorts of things. So they are in the Northern Standards, and they have been adopted to ensure that the current documentation that we have, where each province has got different ways of trading, as if they are dealing with different human beings. I think the impact of all the effects of alcohol is the same. Where you are in Northwest Zone, Gauteng, at the end of the day, you are a human being, and if there are health issues, they are equally affected. So the consistency in the trading conditions has been achieved, but it's a matter of implementation of those nonsense standards now across the provinces. But we have all the commitments from the various entities who have endorsed the Northern Standards. So just to, by way of example, just in terms of the structure of this industry, we do have players, a number of players, but I must say that the industry is dominated by a few players. You know, if you look at the beer market, you already have the SAB, which dominates over 90% of the market share. And we then have another operator in that space, a manufacturer, Heineken. I think the brewery is called Sigen Brewery. But you basically are dealing with an industry that, from a structural point of view, is already entrenched. The barriers to entry are very high. The cost to operate are also very high. So, the likelihood of facilitating any form of competition in that area is close to non-existent. You also have like your traditional African beer, where your dominant player there is United Breweries, with again over 90% of the market. Then in terms of wines and spirits, you have Distell as the dominant player. And there are a number of other smaller entities in that area. So I think what we are basically saying is that the world policy objectives that we intended to achieve in 2003, when the legislation was passed, but there are challenges around the socio-economic effects of alcohol. This is what has put the issue on the table again, to review whether we are sufficiently dealing with these issues. The issues here around the current liability or street liability, as McDonald put it, is an issue that was put to the table also in 2003 at that point. So obviously through consultation processes, it perhaps was found not to be necessary at that point, but it is now necessary, hence it is put back on the table for further consideration. In respect of the issue of transformation in the industry, this is also a concern that was put to the table again when the 2003 legislation was being processed. And members would recall that at the time, the proposal that was on the table was to create a three-tier system where if you're a player in one tier, you are not allowed to play in the next tier. And that did not was not fully proceeded with, because of some of the obvious interventions that came through the parliamentary process and all of that. But I think that it is important that we consider this this issue seriously, in a sense that I think even in terms of the policy, there should be a very a specific level of transformation in accordance with the CCCD levels that should be put to this industry to say, by whatever year, they should at least come to a level that is acceptable, because it is just stagnant. And for as long as it continues to be like this, it does not necessarily benefit the economy from the ownership perspective and empowerment. So there are things that McDonald's has on. I'm just going to highlight the ones that now have become a bit controversial, I think because of how people prefer to put them in the media. However, these are important issues that raise, I think, important considerations, I think, for every member of the public, and equally so for the members of this committee. The issues that have come up significantly under attack, the issues relating to the increase of the age limit from 18 to 21. The one question that I was asked at some point was whether we were sober when we were making this proposal. I can assure you that we were very sober. And this proposal is made especially from the aspects relating to social development. It is without doubt that the cost of alcohol and alcohol abuse is actually draining the state. The amount of money that the state makes out of this industry is the same amount of money, or even slightly more, that the state spends to clean up the harm that results from this industry. So if you look at the health statistics in hospital admissions and all of that, you will see how much is contributed by the use of alcohol, road accidents. So there's no debate about it anymore. I think what is important is for us to arrive at a policy intervention that will strike a very nice balance so that the industry does not continue to cause harm and without necessarily cleaning after themselves. And I think this is one thing that we need to emphasize as well in terms of the trading conditions as well, because this is an ongoing exercise to say it's like recycling. If you're producing containers for your products, like bottles, you must have a process of getting back those bottles for recycling. In other countries, it's a bigger obligation. Hence, companies will even put measures to innovate and come up with containers that are easily recyclable, so that they actually, it doesn't cost them a lot to recycle them and reuse them. So in the same breath here, that is the sentiment. On the issue of the age limit, we do know that there will be a constitutional argument that this is unconstitutional, because if you are 18, you can actually get married, you can enter into a contract by yourself without your parents. So why are we stopping people who are already capable of getting married from drinking alcohol? So, Chair, my response to that has been, I didn't know that marriage was that harmful. So it's like people are saying that, you know, the level of harm when you're entering into a marriage contract or whatever it is the same as the harm that is caused by alcohol. And I think what we are doing here, we're not talking about at what point do we consider a person to be old enough to get married. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about at what point is it a bit heavier, or the effect is not so severe, you know, to start drinking. So the research is there, the statistics are there. The younger you start, the more you are likely to be able not to control it. You are unlikely to control it when you are older, so you start early. So that is the fact. The increasing levels of minors and young people that are getting involved in alcohol abuse is increasing, the figures are increasing significantly. It's for that reason, Chair, that you'll see that also the advertising from the liquor industry does to a certain extent point towards that generation in terms of the kinds of brands that they are producing now, more type fruit juice type, to attract people that to graduate from sweeter to admit hardcore. So that is a fact. So the issue is about just at what age do we think it's necessary. It's a decision for every country. We don't think there's anything unconstitutional about it, for as long as it can be justified on public interest grounds. And in this case, the public policy incentives are more motivating to deal with this issue. So the second issue is the issue of transformation. This is the one that also is coming up in our engagement. But I must indicate that this must be monitored very closely, and hence in the proposal we are requesting that, you know, in terms of the trading condition, when registration is issued to a manufacturer, this must be strict conditions. And so that if they have been complied with, then it should, we should have the power to revoke the license or refuse to renew it going forward, so that we can compare some form of transformation to take place in this industry. The first one is the advertising. Chair, in respect of the prohibition around advertising, currently this is a self-regulated matter. The industry is regulating it by trying to ensure that they do not advertise the products in a manner that is likely to influence or attract minors. So there is nothing much around it. In 2008, we commissioned a study to look at the issue of advertising. There were recommendations that came out of it. We put the recommendations to the industry, and the industry didn't think that those were available. And the recommendations were just to restrict in terms of like broadcasting hours, you know, at what time, maybe in the evening can they advertise, so that they do not have to target the channels which are watched largely by people that I am. So those recommendations were not taken. And it became very difficult to even enforce them, because the legislation doesn't allow us to. So it is increasingly proving that where the regulation doesn't work, then there is a need to then provide for it in the legislation to ensure that you achieve the level of compliance that is necessary to deal with the situation. And in this issue, we know that the argument that will be put by the industry, and they put that publicly, is that there's no scientific proof that advertising leads to consumption. There is no scientific proof for that. We agree with them. There's no scientific proof, but there is practical proof. Because if it wasn't doing anything, if it was not intended to increase consumption, they would not spend that kind of money. So what we are saying is that maybe indeed it's important that the Minister of Health, spearheading this issue, is going to save the industry from wasting money, because they are saying that it doesn't help them to get more customers. It doesn't help them to get more people to consume. But what they're saying is that it helps them to move a beer drinker or a Heineken drinker to move to a customer. So it's like brand movement. That's what they're saying. So we think that I think that argument is now safe. We don't think it makes any impact anymore. And we're saying that if it doesn't give them any benefit, then I think it should not be a concern for them. If from a health perspective, the advertising proposals that are being made, similar to the ones that were made in respect of tobacco, are going to be considered waste. So in this case, the policy document does not propose any new things but the recognition of that area. So the last issue is the issue around the liability McDonald touched on. The issue about liability comes specifically from the transport ministry. It's because of the level of harm that comes with the use of alcohol in this area. And I think what is intended here is to incorporate some level of liability that will disincentivize a trader when he's not serving the customers, and he can see that the customers that they should be able to stop, because they know that anybody could be held liable. People argue now that how are people going to see that a person is drunk? That is the question that was asked when we were consulting on the Northern Standard. And I must say, the prohibition to sell to already intoxicated persons is already in the Northern Standard. So it's not a new requirement. The only thing that is being proposed here now is now a liability in the event that we continue to do that. From the Ministry of Transport perspective is that it will deter the traders from ignoring that prohibition. They will try and make sure that they put measures to ensure that their staff that are working are able to identify that. And we don't think it's that much difficult. Yes, maybe there are a few people that you would not see that they are drunk, but in most cases, practically, people can really clearly make themselves identifiable when they are drunk. So we think that from a control perspective, that is something that can be monitored and managed properly. Share on this one as well, the questions around how this would be enforced, how this would be proven in court, we're not at that level. But we do think that with everything that is wrong, the way even civil society generally will assist in making this available. We've seen the use of cell phones now in filming things and violence in various communities which the police would not even have known about them if people have not picked them up and raised them. So we think that civil society will also be useful in this, because at this point from the summit that was held in this regard, a lot of communities have said, we have even given up complaining because even if you call the police, nothing happens. And it is because our police are constrained by the enforcement powers that are in this legislation and in the provincial legislation, in the sense that people even budget for the fines. If they are trading and when they are closed down, they open the next day, they just pay fine. So the proposal as well is in here just to enhance those issues to deal with it. So the under that civil liability, the issue around illegal trade, we continue, when we engage with the industry, we continue to be told that the producers are telling us and distributors, no, we don't supply to outlets that are illegal. But every day when the police are raiding, they find alcohol in those illegal outlets. So the question is, whose alcohol is that? How does it get there? Because it cannot be that we continue to battle the issues of illegal trading, but there is alcohol that's found there. So those brands that are found there, the owners must take some form of responsibility how their brands go into those illegal outlets. That is the proposal that's being put to deal specifically with the issue of illegal trading. It is growing. At some point it was stable, but it is growing. And because of the fact that the enforcement powers are not as great as they should be. So in conclusion, I just want to say that this issue, we are not talking about it now that the document has been published. The committee can be assured we've engaged the industry on these issues before. We already have the industry's views on these issues. They will give us their views again in the public consultation process. What we are hoping is that when the industry tells us that something is not going to work, the industry will provide their solution in terms of what they think will work. And we will objectively, consider those issues. We will open our minds. We are not closed in terms of what, has been proposed in here. These are things that are proposed especially based on the consultation in the IMC, based on the inputs that have come from various departments, and the consultative processes that have taken place so far. So this is a further opportunity for us to engage the industry and ensure that we come out with a proposal that can be workable for the industry and balance all of the issues. So I'm going to end there and to say that yes, we are still so working today. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG, and Julie. Members, just to remind you, it's now 11:45. We are closing off at 12:30. There is another meeting taking place in here, the chairs, at 11:45. Right. Honourable McPherson, Honourable Nkongi, Honourable Albert, Honourable Quinoff, Honourable Yatima.
Thanks, Chair. In light of that, there actually was quite a bit that I need to get through. So I don't know if we're going to have one engagement or we're going to have a second round. Can I just get clarity from you?
Yes, what we are going to do is I'm going to initially give everyone who is asking anything 3 minutes max.
And then can we have a second round?
That's it, please.
Okay, thank you. Chair, I think at the heart of where we need to begin is some of the very serious constitutional issues that this policy deals with. And if one looks at the Constitution, and I'm sure Ms. Ntuli and Mr. Zenze will be very familiar with Schedule 4 and 5,
of the Constitution, which deals with the national and provincial competencies relating to liquor. And what this policy, or certainly within the outline of it, seems to do is ignore the 1999 Constitutional Court challenge around the liquor bill and what the prerogatives of the department and the provinces were, specifically around the standardization of licensing and what the roles of the department were in terms of trade and industrialization. So in respect of that, I would put the question to the department, how does this policy, especially with regards to standardization around licensing, relate to the challenge of 1999, and how has that been factored in? Because if one compares that court challenge to the policy, then it would not be possible for the policy to speak to issues like liquor premises being located at 500 meters away from properties, business zoning issues, trading hours and pre-inspections and loading certificates, and who does this actually include, and where does it end? I mean, where does the suburb begin and end? And that's a very interesting question. So you say no liquor outlet may be located within 500 meters near a suburb. Where does it begin and end? And if a place of worship was established near an original bottle store, for instance, would that bottle store be forced to close down because the place of worship opened? With regards to the argument of the extension of liability, I think you have a fundamental problem on your hands, in that it is like saying that a gun store, a registered gun store that sells firearms to a person with a license, who then goes and murders someone, that gun store is responsible for it. That is simply not in law, and in fact it is bad law, and you know as well as I know that you are outside in the courts on that issue. Is my 3 minutes up already? That was the 1 minute off. Okay. I think that we need to also agree that the enforcement legislation is one of the problems that this department faces. Okay, so where am I now? Will I get a second round then? Okay, well, I'll come back for the second round, thank you.
I think the question of the age limit should be taken for it. Well, currently we didn't issue now, which is now, I mean, in South Africa. The voting age is about to get 18. And we are giving a person the right to vote and determine the future of the country through everything, and then a single person cannot take his own independent decision on number of issues. As if they're running away from the responsibility of society to make persons to take sober decisions and taking calm decisions. So these other issues, some issues that we're just running away from taking responsibility, because if we are saying that people have the right to vote at 18, unless we want to increase the voting age to 21, and then say the president can be able to be reasonable instead of voting between the 21 and taking decisions, including the age. So I just want you to check on that. And I want you to be hard on advertisers. There's nothing against the impact of advertising we have seen everywhere. Some new beer, the liquor brand, they just saw them on TV, and then existing with fishing. It's my first time to see this now. In terms of cigarettes and smoke, most of my friends stopped smoking because of the law that killed advertising. And also the impact of the brand that, I mean, the feature that is put on the cigarette, which says that smoke harms you, smoke kills you, they stop. South Africans, you can't even smoke today in most of the shipping in the country. Without a law being enforced by policemen, is enforced by patrons and the people there. So the marker of advertisement itself is what they are fighting for if it is not an issue. You see, so you need to be hard and need to be realistic. You can go to the Department of Health and check the results, the latest research on the impact of banning advertising on smoking. But what I want you to do is monitor the question of the use of monitoring power is a problem. I'm not sure who monitors that, who enforces that. Where you call that, in townships we're told that we must close at 10, but in Claremont they are closing at 1. I mean, what it means is people who are there that are a threat, or people who are discouraged in terms of the uniformity of trading house. Luckily, there's much worship in the taverns in our townships that are closer to churches, that are closer to schools and so forth. Whose responsibility becomes that? SAPS or who? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Nkongi, Honourable Elders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In relation to the tackling of the problems with socioeconomic harms and all of those things that you've mentioned, they are huge problems, admittedly, and they need to be dealt with in an appropriate manner. Have you done any international best practice research? Is there a regulatory impact assessment regarding this? Much of these problems relate to poverty, I would say. I'm not an expert, but you do find aggregation of these problems within poor areas. So would the solution not lie in socioeconomic development, for instance? That's just a question I'm throwing out there. Then, with regard to the specifics of the policy, just two questions. Legal age. So if you're going to increase it to 21 years, you're going to be criminalizing a lot of young people. But I can assure you they will drink. You will not stop them. Are you going to be arresting them? What are you going to do with them? Criminalizing people is not a way of solving a problem. Ask the people, use the ethos and help them. So, behavioral economical principles, behavioral economics, psychological type of incentives, are they not the way to deal with this? Then, liability. You are imposing a legal liability by legislation on individuals without any causal link between themselves and the eventual harm that occurs. That is contrary to any law in South Africa. It is so unconstitutional it won't even be entertained for a second in any law in South Africa by any judge who takes this substance seriously. I think you can just forget about it. Have you done any legal research on this? Is there a precedent that supports your view? You cannot just, you know, let's say I'm a barman and there's a person at 3 times my size, but he's worth it, he's drunk. Or he gets drunk and I'm trying to stop that guy. You're going to visit me in the special care unit in the hospital. How am I going to stop that guy? I think I just like that, but I think about that, please. I think that's all for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Elvis. Honourable Cornwall?
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, I was in the Science and Technology meeting, and we were dealing with paleosciences. And I'm telling you, even in those years, 250 million years ago, you will see the beer pots, you know, emerge on the rock findings. But nevertheless, I just want to make a comment that the liquor industry is not homogeneous. You know, it's not homogeneous industry. And, you know, there are the good guys and the bad guys. And do I, you know, it can never be an umbrella policy in terms of before we do proper research. Now, there are those who contribute towards jobs, to tourism, to transformation, and the others are just there maybe eating for the money and don't care what's happening to their customers. So what I want to know is, do we have research what South Africans are drinking? What are they drinking? Is it brandy and coke? Is it brandy? Is it gin? Is it beer? Is it wine? So we need to know what they are drinking so that we can target certain aspects of the industry. And then on sponsorships, I think if we take sponsorships away, sports sponsor, liquor sponsorships, I think we're going to kill our sports development in South Africa. It will just die. I don't think they will survive. And then, you know, we must either then have more lotteries money, and, you know, or train South Africans to do that, but that is a concern. So what I want to ask is, I think the Minister of Tourism is important. I don't think he's on the IMC. And I think the Minister of Sport is also an important role player. So is there any interaction with those two departments with regard to this policy?
Yes, thank you very much, Honourable Colonel, Honourable Seema.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Yeah, the statistics are frightening when it comes to how much liquor is consumed here in South Africa, so I can imagine the concern. But like my colleagues before me, I see a lot of problems in the way. There are many hurdles. Many of them have been largely covered, but I'll just try to speak to certain aspects of those that have covered me. Like, for instance, when it comes to liability of manufacturers. I just want to point out that in our criminal legal system, liability is based on wrongfulness. And unless people are proving you wrong, if you were either wrong or wrongful or you were negligent, you are not liable in South African criminal law. So there will need to be a change of our legal system in order to make these people liable. On the question of age limit, I just want to say that there is a big difference between under 18 and under 21. Until you are 18, you are largely at school and you are not earning an income. Between 18 and 21, you are normally working. I know there is unemployment in South Africa, but that is the age when people have got lots of money and want to spend it. So it's not going to be easy to stand in their way. And then I also endorse the points on adverts and sponsorships. I want to say when it comes to trading hours that already there is so much pressure from the liquor community that these outlets should be open on Sundays. So if we say now they have to limit the hours they have, again, it's going to be an uphill battle, so I just don't know how we go about these hurdles. But the story is well made, the concerns are very serious, but there are too many hurdles in the way.
Thank you, Honourable Mantash, followed by Honourable Kalako.
Chairperson, I come from Ghana, and I know the impact of liquor abuse and the rate at which crime increases where there are illegal outlets that sell liquor in our locations and our townships. I faced that in a court case, and from the poor communities I've seen the statistics say that the internet is amongst the highest when you come to the trade, and that's the poorest province. So the concern of the president to set up in the ministerial team was not for fun, because it impacts badly, especially on the poor people, be it disease, burden of disease, be it they becoming very poor every day. I hear the legalities and the constitutionalities. Whatever point we must balance, this is an industry that contributes largely to the country. But balance it with the burden of health, you know, challenges amongst our people. The current government should do that balancing. And we should intervene at some point. It can be business as usual in this field. Because the infertility of black people are the most suffering. The most disease burden is upon them. For other people, it could be that they care about profit that they make out of it in us. But we suffer the most as the black people. We are very sick. We are becoming poor every day. And the burden is put upon women because the statistics say the men are the most consuming. And that translates to irresponsible men leaving their households without a breastfeed after they've been given their salary. So we must balance our act. The department has to intervene and they look at the legalities that are raised, but something has to be done. It can't be that we let it go and it is currently. I rest my case, Jefferson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mantash, Honorable Kalako.
Thank you, Chair. Quickly, Chair, on your policy proposal, there's that part which you are proposing some measures away. You mentioned all others, then you have public institutions at the end. If you would have to clarify that, what the public institutions you're talking about, does this include in airports or your train stations? Because that's where also the defense is sold. And then also on the, you mentioned this dominant companies on this specific centers of liquor. You said I didn't hear you in English company, African, traditional African company, company which dominates them. Because this thing is no longer, you don't see townships in that anymore. But I think the policy and the intentions of the act and the proposals of the policy, I think they are good intentions. But I don't know how far have you gone in consultation as a department, as you did talk about consultation. Because if you look at the complication of the issue, and as you're explaining, you can see there will be many challenges, especially from the industries. There will be many challenges throughout, whether small, big, distributors, retailers. To me, if you, it will depend on how you have gone. I think you need, I think you said your consultation stakes is a very different. Is 30 days enough for that? For everybody to be on board, especially around these issues. But I think that's something which you will have to consider also. So that everybody is given a chance to take it. But, Chair, I think the policy with all these good intentions which I hear, will need, I know when also it comes to us, we'll have to undertake some consultation with the public. But have you consulted in that meeting and get views of these tavern association people, some of them who are distributors, besides suppliers and producers. So that is where the problem is. Because, you know, we are trying here to keep the situation, because in poor areas, small townships, which are so poor, they have over 90% unemployment. In each street you find a small tail. In each street you find a small tail. That is why I think the intentions here are. So, how to check with you
what I understand, to me, unless I'm wrong, I don't see a clash with your proposals, with provinces being focused on municipalities. And unless you put it in another way when you were crafting or finishing the final details of. But if it's in the manner at the moment, and which I think also that another level of consultation, which I'm sure you might have done with them, which also will guide you to avoid those problems.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalaku. You can hear some of the points made are shared. There are some points that are shared by a number of members here. I was quite struck by the population here. On this one statistic of the tech industry and some total of business, I assume, on the right, I don't know what they are. That is says source national liquor authority 2015 provincial licenses. Okay? Look at that, and you look at some of the populations and these high figures here. If I was to take in Mpumalanga 4.2 million, the population, and you look at somewhere else, 1.2 million the populations themselves, it seems to underpin the point made by Honourable Mark Touch about poor provinces and an abnormal increase in the drinking. But there are one or two issues which I think we may need to look at. First of all, why were all these licenses issued? The one about industry trends, 2003 to 2011, starting off with 35 and now 2000, was that unexpected consequences and trying to, open up the industry to all players, I don't know, that was the reason there. The other issue would be along the ages being really, many people have tackled that one. But I do have a couple of them here. The cost. You emphasize quite rightly the harmful effects. But what is a comparative study on this, the harmful effects as such? And when it comes to the age, there is a reference, or there was a reference made of a country of 16 years, 18, 19, 20. Well, have we seen whether 20 years cut down their drinking or, whatever. Can we get some sort of comparative analysis there? The mutual responsibility for drinking, I'm surprised that's no longer the case. When I was a student, you were literally thrown out of a pub if you looked the slightest bit unsteady. So today things are a lot more gentle, keeping the door open for you. I'm concerned about a harmonization and very disturbed to learn that not all provinces have implemented the provisions of 2003. Now, is there something wrong in our legislation, the constitution, that enables concurrency to work against the norm? What gives them a license to do this? Why are we even setting norms and standards? What for? Potentially, refuse to comply with. All we're doing is giving them a license to flout the law. I'd like to see that looked at more seriously. Thank you. Now, you have got 15 minutes. 15, 20 minutes at the outside to respond. Where we need written responses, please do so. Can you do it? I want to get some response to what we've done. No, Honourable McPherson, I've cut mine down considerably. Thank you.
No, thanks, we will share the point with the colleagues and the TDG. But let me start with this one of vicarious liability, strict liability. Let me expose my ignorance here. I thought in the law of deed, including criminal law, it's a common law issue. This principle is there. There is no dispute about it. The issue of strict liability, it is in the law of deed, common law. It is there. I mean, the ships in the ocean,
the youth to have oil spill, it goes to Australia, somebody smokes, and then flood rates, it goes to Sydney, they do each other. They didn't know at all. So therefore, we may have a problem of a burden of proof. That one you can see. But the size of our law, so we are extending it to here. And we push them here. So right here. Then maybe you may say, no, it is not true that it's not in our law of civil or criminal law. Then it's okay. We can revisit it at the end. But that, if that is true, then that's the end of the debate. That's how I want to call. So, but you need to cut the G. It's true that the landowner may not be sued. But if it comes to a push, you may need to go and destroy where these illegal issues are being manufactured, like in the area of counterfeit. We are buying counterfeited goods in the street. But you'll find that you see them tomorrow, they are there in the street. You deal with the source. That's an example. So, but all in all is that the chain may be a problem, but we are restricting it only to the person who is providing liquor to a drunken person. You reach the UK laws, this issue of seemingly a drunk or not, they are applying those issues. We benchmark with them. So the issue of strict liability is part of our law, then we can debate later. And then the other issue of concurrent jurisdiction. In the 1989 and 2003, that dispute, really it was between government itself, that is provinces and but what is happening now, we are talking about a nonsense standard, where they are agreed by those two bodies, one government in 2 years, they have already agreed. So we will try our level best, not to corrode too much and limit the issue of concurrent jurisdiction to an extent that the provinces now want challenge. They are saying, let's come together and talk. What nonsense standards can we come with? And then in this nonsense standards, that what is exactly happening. But in 1999, the case in point, that gave rise to the retail and the distribution and manufacturing. We have indicated then. So we think, as for now, the nonsense standards that we have already promulgated in better comments, they will proceed, go to provincial legislature and also the national legislature, this one, and go into the act. So that is the harmonious approach. We will want to respect the constitution. So the other issue of the age limit. The age limit, Chair, we said there are other factors. On its own, it is no longer a debate that can it limit the issue of drinking. That one has been proven. We can give statistics, we can put it in writing. That it can do, and that it can show that people who are admitted to hospital because of heart accident, one quarter of them come from this age group. And if you are above, say, 20, if you are 21, you may take somebody who is not drinking, or that they want to be drinking, and say, today you will be driver, I am going to drink. That is the responsibility that can be taken, but not with this youth of 18 and below. And I indicated that in Austria, France, 16 are now. But they have a culture there. It's like Germany. They have got a culture of drinking, but responsibly. Maybe drinking 2 pints a day is very healthy. Here's an example. So, by the way, we are dealing with micro and macro elements. These things are healthy, but here we are seeing, we are now in the abuse. We are abusing them. So therefore, the benchmark studies can be given that age also contributes. Then we want to say age, limiting it together with trading hours, as the distributors not distributing to the SMEs and the like, then we can curtail the problem, as an example. Then if it is wanted in writing, we can explain ourselves better. But the issue of the IMC not consisting of the, with the Department of Tourism, as an example, I think is a good comment. I'm not so sure whether the Minister of the Environment, Child Affairs and Tourism, I know that they're fleet, but it's a good suggestion that we need to talk to them, because the issue of regulations of Roma Fest, we saw their impact on the visitors, maybe we need to consult with them. But transport, they are the ones who said in issues of street liability, please go and maybe steal something from the transport legislation for the area of street liability. So in this area we say if it is in our law and the constitution is there, it's a matter of application. Then the other issue, challenge mark, we will provide that in writing, but we indicated that France, Austria, they have 16, and then we indicated that Ukraine is 21, and then Asian countries, most of them is 21, Japan is 20. And they have already agreed that it's a national approach, it's a national policy, whether you want to cumulatively take the age issue and other factors, and then deal with the problem. Sponsorship. In the area of sponsorship, the DPG has alluded to this issue of saying, by the way, after this conference, we consulted with the industry to say, what is it that you can do now that you are self-regulating yourself? But it seems as if they were not interested. Now we are running with a policy, we are going to consult with them, but we are seeing self-regulation is not working. We need to intervene, and but we need to justify our intervention, and those interventions should be followed by consultation. Consultation, I think, is a constitutional imperative. If 30 days is not enough, whether people ask for extension is another issue, but we respect consultation. We are consulting with a lot of people. And then the other issue is being, I take it as an encouragement to say liability, if you look at the issues of Tobago, the name of Tobago, that it worked. So therefore there is a causal link between advertisements and, as I say, that one we can prove. And then sometimes they say if you don't advertise, you are like somebody who's dead or winking in the dark. So it works, that we know. So therefore we want to talk to each. Some will restrict, sometimes will have to ban. So maybe my colleagues may take other issues, but I tried to talk in generalities, and the DPG is good as well. She will talk to the chairperson from them. Then.
Chair, with your permission, I'm just going to ask Sandy to just address the question about, you know, what are some people drinking? What are they drinking? The beer? If you can just give us a sense from the National Liquor Authority side of things, and maybe respond to any other question that may have related to the operation side.
Thanks, Sebastian. According to what you've seen around South Africa, there's three categories that are being drunk in South Africa. Number one is being beer, your beer, shortly followed by your ciders. Your ciders is the one that are very sweet. And then the last one is the whiskey and wine. But most of the time, the other part that you start drinking is your, what you call in the drinking is your bapsack. Bapsack. It's a cheap one. It's what most of the people in certain areas, but in terms of what you think, if your beer is number one in South Africa, followed by your ciders, and then thirdly is your spirits and wine. But in most in the poor communities, what we've seen that they're drinking mostly is the pubs and a traditional African beer.
Okay.
that's what most people are thinking. One of the issues that has been raised in terms of the international bad practice, at the department we took some international benchmarking where we have to look at what is happening across other countries so we can able to see how South Africa can able to respond to the problems of alcohol abuse. Countries that we visited was a country like the USA. We have seen in terms of how they do it. We went to England, specifically looking at how they deal with the issues of dealing with alcohol abuse and also dealing with the issue of licensing there. And also went to Thailand and Seoul to look also at how things are done in those particular countries. And now we came back, we look at all of those and see what South Africa needed to do in that regard. And also, to now remember, the WHO issued 10 strategies to combat alcohol abuse. But the thing that they say is that not all those strategies can work in isolation. So they need to work in conjunction. That's why now today we say, let's start with the issue of increasing the age. Let's look at the restriction on advertisement, radius, and all of those. So we can able to see what can able to work for South Africa. Thank you.
I just want to try and pick on some of the things that have not been responded to or just read. I think on the aspect that Honourable Pearson raised around the competence to determine certain trading norms, that is a competence that is allowed by the Constitution in terms of setting the norms and standards. It's for that reason that Section 37 create the NLPC, which is the Police Council, where those norms and standards will be agreed upon. And those norms and standards have already been agreed upon in terms of that process. So it is within the constitutional framework. So the only thing that I must be open to the committee about, and I want to just say that this is flagged, the issue of the age limit increase age limit changes from 18 to 21, the consultation processes during the norms and standards, because this was also part of the norms and standards that were presented. But these issues were taken out of the norms and standards because they needed a policy decision. Because in terms of the policy, the age limit was 18. So it cannot be put in the norms and standards if you don't have the empowering provisions for it. And for that reason, that is debated now in the policy, so that if it changes in the policy, then it will then be part of the normal standards. But it was discussed. Chair, I must also indicate that in the policy council discussions, this is one of the issues that the provinces felt that maybe it should not be proceeded. So I must just indicate that. However, it is one thing that came out of the resolutions of the IMC. So it is in this document, again, for further consultation. So the industry will make further input on it, and we will then make appropriate recommendations after further consultation. I think McDonald has addressed the issue around the liability. I think we said that that in all the things that are in this document, in as much as they might look like we didn't apply our mind. We have applied our mind to it. Those arguments are arguments that are on the table, that were discussed and debated. We sought legal opinions on some of these issues. We are trying to balance the issues. However, there are certain other imperatives that require a public policy decision. And that public policy decision would be a decision that cabinet must make, having considered all of the issues. And the legalities around that can then be detailed in the legislation itself. But I think in terms of the principal issues, where they are non-existent in law or so forth, that does not arise in fact at this point. It does exist in law, however, it's about how it can be implemented. So we're saying that those considerations will still be factored now as we're doing the public consultation process, and we are willing to listen, and you know the outcome of the consultation process, Chair, could basically you know take this thing off the table. So if we receive the motivations that say it shouldn't be there, those motivations will be considered. So I must indicate that, remember the issue around the three-tier system, to break basically industry, to remove the vertical integration and all of that. It was an issue that was debated extensively. In fact, there were calls for it to be reintroduced now. We engaged with the industry. The industry indicated that there are other ways that we can implement, and they are showing some commitment towards that. Hence, we did not include it in the policy proposal because of that engagement. So what I'm saying is that we're really open-minded about this thing, and it is a process that we are going into, you know, in a bona fide way, Chair. And we will listen to those inputs.
Chair, I'm going to ask you, EDG, to conclude in the next 2 minutes.
Yes, just on the issue of the who's monitoring the issue around training hours and the inconsistencies in the provinces, the provincial liquor board should be dealing with that. But you will find that there are challenges in some areas because the inspectorate and like I said again, the penalties as well. They're just not good enough. They can't achieve certain enforcement. But I think the concerns that are in the recent case have put a different dimension in the sense that there's an argument about a township versus, you know, other areas that are more affluent, that they've got a better treatment. That's an issue that the provinces must deal with, and it's within their competence. So the issue around trading on Sunday, that issue does not arise in these discussions because the long-term standards have in fact allowed trading on Sunday with limitations around the hours. So the issue around Sunday is not an issue of debate anymore, I think, at this point. So those are things that are now addressed. So the conversation with the trader, the taverners, and all of that, this will also do that, will be engaging with them. But they have indicated that in this policy document, from the civil liability issue around the, you know, selling to an already intoxicated person who causes an accident or any harm, apart from that, there is absolutely nothing that impacts on the trader on the route. The issue around the age is the one that's going to be a difference from 18 to 18 to say now you might have to look at a person and say is the person 21 or not. The age verification is already a requirement in there. So there's nothing that changes in terms of their practices really, because most of their practices are in the nonsense standards which have been discussed with the provinces. But this is largely intended for manufacturers, distributors, machines, which is the national competency. So I'll stop there. I know that there may be other things that we have not dealt with, but we will consider some of the issues that have come out here around the legal research and all of that. We have that information. We have applied our minds to this. And when we put out things as proposals in the policy document, it doesn't mean that we have those things.
DDG, thank you very much. There are other areas I know that you would like to address that remain outstanding, and we will ask Mr. Medina to order a refresh your memory on that. Another issue which I'll take forward is your last comment in 1 minute, Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. I think that this is such an important issue, and there are so many unasked questions, and I think to simplify them is putting questions to the department is quite unfair to this committee in our role as an oversight body. And I would really implore that, I mean, our time is cut from 1 o'clock to 12:30. We were supposed to finish Monday at 12:30, so we have lost an opportunity for a second round. And I would really request that we let the DDG come back and that we discuss this matter. And that, in fact, we ask the minister to extend the deadline by 30 days, by 30 days. The gambling policy, it is 45 days. This is only given 30 days. And I think we really, as a committee, need to engage further on this. That's the firm proposal I put on the table to you, Jim.
Honourable Kalaga already raised the matter of extension. Let us not repeat anything. Because this is the last minute left for me to close the meeting. 20 seconds, Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a point of order, we made a decision as a committee that any new policy proposal coming here or bill or regulation must be accompanied by regulatory impact assessment, and I have not seen anything from that sort of form. Thank you very much.
Yes. Does this draft as we talk, so that may well be the reason, but we'll put the point has been made, we will communicate that in writing. You're quite right, Honourable Elvis. I want to say we will communicate further questions or comments members may have. We must do that, and we would ask you, DDD, to remain in touch with us over this matter. It, we do consider it very serious, and as I've already indicated, the briefing, once you bring back a solid bill to us and it's tabled by the Minister, we would like the NCOP to join us so that you don't duplicate presentations in this regard. The matter is of concurrency. We are also concerned, as Mr. Ingmar gave, to ask Parliament's legal office to examine this issue around tagging, concurrency and the rest of it, because we continue to have legislation flouted. Is it because there's a loophole somewhere? Are we misinterpreting it? Or where are we going wrong? So we need to get that done in a professional manner as well by our own department. Of course, we want the department itself to continue to work in this area, and I think I must underline the point of extension of time in this regard. This is a very serious matter. We ourselves may wish to extend some time here as a committee and go to one or two other provinces, particularly those who we have a question mark on. All right? Let's discuss that at another meeting. Thank you to the department. With respect to the committee, we are having what's called a little Indian summer. You'll be away for a week in the ice pools. Because if anything's happening, you stay in the light, 16th of June. You will be back on Wednesday, the 17th. I've shifted the time from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. There's not going to be any excuse for people arriving late by plane unless you snowballed. So we do expect you here on the 17th of June. It's Tika. Thank you very much. Enjoy you. Where are all the young people? There you are. Lots of you on the